welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, Laura Zara Popinski, librarian, writer, and all-around bookworm. Today we have a special episode all about the Massachusetts Book Awards. My guest is Michelle Hoover, the 2020 coordinator for the Massachusetts Book Awards, who I served with as a lead juror in the Children's Picture Book and Early Reader category. Michelle is at Grub Street, where she leads the Novel Incubator Program. She's a 2014 NEA Fellow and has been a writer-in-residence at Bucknell University, a McDowell Fellow, and a winner of the Penn New England Discovery Award. Her debut, The Quickening, won a 2010 Massachusetts Book Award Must Read. Her latest novel, Bottomland, was the 2017 All-Iowa Read Selection. She's a native of Iowa and lives in Boston. Michelle, thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm really glad I get to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, it was such a book nerd dream come true to be a part of the Massachusetts Book Awards. And I'm really excited to share some of the process with listeners. And, you know, I think people are looking for more books to read than ever right now as we're home more. So I just think this list is really a treasure trove of great titles that have been curated for people. So I'm excited to promote those to listeners. So can you tell us a little bit about the Mass Center for the Book and the Massachusetts Book Awards for listeners who aren't familiar?
The Massachusetts Center for the Book, I mean, the Book Awards is really like our leading program. That we do a bunch of other work in the state of supporting libraries and writers and really making connections between different parts of the book world. So there's a lot of stuff kind of going on underground that I think people aren't even aware that we're doing. The Book Awards, I think, is just kind of the most noticeable thing that we're able to do. And the Book Awards is now in its 20th year. And that's what they brought me on to help with our 20th year celebration. The only problem is in our 20th year celebration, we're all stuck indoors.
So
it's become a little different than what we thought it would be. But we're actually still a little bit working on what we are going to do to make up for that. But we're going to try to do our best with this year's authors because we've got such a great list of authors.
Oh, the list is fantastic. I was looking over it again this morning, and I feel like there really is something for everybody, and it is for all ages, which is great too. There is, so we've got fiction, nonfiction, and poetry for the adults, mm-hmm. and then we have picture book and early readers, which I got to help select, which was really fun. And then middle grade and young adult is its own category. So I feel like for adults listening, this will sort of be a nice chance to add to your to-be-read list. Think of books that you want to maybe order from your local bookstore or get from your library. I'll also link to them. I started a bookshop.org page, so I'll put any books we talk about on there. And then, you know, for parents and teachers, the children's and middle grade lists are such a great chance to, you know, find books to read with your kids. Maybe if you are maybe going to be in a homeschool situation this year, or even just to have, you know, great books to read at bedtime or what have you. And then, you know, for teachers and librarians, these are great books to order for your classrooms and your libraries. To start off, I would love for you to share a little bit about how the process works, because I know from my perspective, it was very cool to see the many, many just such high quality books that were entered into the picture book category. If you could give us sort of a little insight into how the list is selected and then the winners overall, I think that would be interesting to people.
So we start putting out the call for books pretty early. We started in the fall and the deadline was in the winter. And we asked publishers to send them all to our offices, three copies of each title. And this year, in terms of titles that could actually be up for the award, I believe we had 312 separate titles. So imagine that times three copies of each book. And sometimes publishers sent us multiple, even more copies than that. So we actually have a rather small office. So it became a little bit like, where do we even put the books before we ship them out to our jurors? And I think, you know, like our fiction and nonfiction, particularly nonfiction, is always really, really long. And so Ethan Gilsdorf was our lead judge for nonfiction. And he got just the first box. And he's like, oh, that's a really big box. And so, I mean, these were our lead judges. You know yourself, our lead judges did a lot of work of looking through all the books that were up for the award in each category. So again, we had those five categories. And so we had wonderful lead judges. We had you for children's. We had Furuka Abazit for, she's a librarian at the Boston Public Library. She helped us with young adult and middle grade. We had Bill Pierce with Agni Magazine, who helped us with fiction. We had Ethan Gilsdorf, who teaches with me at Grub Street, and he helped us with nonfiction. And then we had Sean, and he's actually been a judge for us for years. He works up in Lowell and as a librarian, and he's also
Well, it's funny. I kept thinking, because my, you know, I was thrilled when my giant box of picture books and easy readers came, and, you know, I spent so much time poring over them and reading them over and over, but I kept thinking, oh my goodness, mine are picture books. All the people who are getting, you know, full-length adult nonfiction and fiction and everything. I can't imagine the hours spent reading, though I'm sure it was a lot of fun.
So each lead judge, we had them really helping us choose the 12 finalists. And then Sharon and myself also had read all of those books as well. So to become very, to understand what we were getting in. And we were also paying attention to, we would also get nominations of books and people talking about books, you know, what are the books that people are excited about, though we also hoped, you know, we don't want that to sway us too much, but so that was really fun and somewhat chaotic and wonderful. And I would do it again. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I loved being part of the process. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, some of your favorites from the list? Any winners that you want to highlight?
I'll go through the it's going to air after the winners and honorees have been announced. We can stick to that. Though there's so many on the rest of the must reads list that were just so, so good. And it was very difficult for all of the juries to choose these top ones. So I think that everyone that was chosen as a must read book should really feel that they, that's a special honor. That those lists of books are really worthy to take a look at. And a lot of them are names that people, readers might not know. So I do highly encourage to check them out and see the diversity and variety of voices that we have in this state. It's really exciting.
I agree. And I will make sure I'm going to put a sort of links to all of the must read books so people can kind of peruse too.
I guess we can start with fiction, since I'm also a fiction writer. So that's where my biases are. So we had Ocean Vuong's On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous was our winner this year. And Ocean Vuong, this book in particular, I believe he also won the Nebo Award, and he actually won many awards for this book. And it's really a rather fearless book. It's autofiction, and that he's playing with that line between fiction and nonfiction. He's set up this conceit in which he's basically telling his mother about himself and about his life and about his story. So that's kind of the fictional part of the conceit. But it talks about, you know, him being an immigrant from Vietnam and him being a young gay man, and just all of the, you know, identity issues, but also deeply personal issues. And it's written in this, I mean, he's initially a poet, so it's written in this kind of really sweeping, gorgeous, but accessible and highly human voice that I think anyone can grab hold of and just be taken away. I mean, it just is absolutely gorgeous. And so I would encourage anyone, even if you're like, oh, I feel like something simpler or something funny or something, I'd encourage you to grab this up, because it really is, there's so much beauty in this. And especially now, I think that'd be important for it to read. There's difficulty too, but the beauty is there too. And then we have the two honorees in fiction. So great. Jennifer Acker's The Limits of the World. Jen edits The Common magazine out in Western Mass. This is her first novel. And this novel is really, I mean, it seems much more than a first novel. It takes place in the United States and India, and it involves an Indian family. It takes place in the United States and Africa, and it involves an Indian family that lives in, I think it's Nairobi. And a lot of the inter-turmoil that happens between the family in terms of basically who they are. Like, one of the sons is much more American. The mother is really holding on to her roots and really holding on to the ways in which her family taught her to be, and which was to not show a lot of emotion and not to speak certain things. And that causes a lot of problems in the family. There's a surprise discovery in the family that and this doesn't really give anything away, that the brother that's living in the States finds out that someone that he thought was his cousin is actually his brother. So there's tons of secrets and betrayals and families figuring out loyalties. Her research and her handling of the family is just absolutely impeccable. Yeah, it's a very smart book.
Yeah,
and it deals with
fantastic.
A lot of big issues. And then you've got Christopher Boucher's Big Giant Floating Head, which, as the title implies, is rather comic, but also sad at the same time. And I think this book surprised a lot of our readers. Chris has been writing for years. And he's got, gosh, I think this might even be his third, fourth, or fifth book. I mean, he's been writing for a long time. But this book, so he's a bit of an experimental writer. And this book is about a Christopher Boucher. So again, he's kind of playing with this kind of metafictional game of putting himself in the book, who's a Christopher Boucher who's gotten divorced and is just kind of reeling from that sadness of divorce and trying to put his life back together. So it really has this really in-depth, great feeling that makes you very passionate for the main character and feel like you're one with him, like you're a part of him. But it's also really funny and strange. And he's able to do things in this kind of experimental mode. It's almost like short stories, but they're so well tied together that it functions as a novel. And so this book really rose up. And I actually think that this kind of book, you know, if a lot of the readers are looking for something just kind of funny and sweet in a way, that I would grab up this book, Big Giant Floating Head.
I feel like a kid with the Scholastic book flyer, because I'm just like marking up like, okay, I got to read the honorees and the winner. I want to read these other ones on the must read list, like circling everything. Yeah, that's great. Well,
so for nonfiction,
we
actually had
nonfiction.
Two radical titles and then the winner. So the winner is actually, I know Grace. Grace Tolusen is the winner of with the Body Papers. And in this book is just brilliant and different and impeccable. The Body Papers is about her growing up in the Philippines and a lot of the sexual abuse that she suffered there and here. And she also had to undergo cancer treatments. I mean, a lot of stuff with how her body essentially was battered in different ways. But it's not... It really kind of just gives you glimpses. It's not wallowing at all. And yet she also she doesn't look away when she needs to not look away. So the way it's pieced together, almost like in these short, individual essay chapters, but the overall resonance is just absolutely beautiful, absolutely brilliant. Highly, highly recommended. So that's memoir. And then we had two,
great.
More historical biographies. So one was American Radicals by Holly Jackson. And that traces a number of famous American protesters throughout American history that have kind of carried the fight forward. And some of their inner wranglings, some of their, you know, issues, how they all kind of fed off each other and built off each other. It's a really quite amazing overview of a great group of people that we still count on today for what's going on today in this age of protest and in this age of radicalism, that people need to stand up and try to make a change.
Yeah, this might be the next thing I try to read. I had circled this before we talked. I've never heard of this one before, you know, for this list. And it just looks really timely to be thinking about all these figures
and
in history.
And then Terry Greenwich's
so really
Black
wonderful.
Radical, which was our other honoree. It's the life and times of William Monroe Trotter. This William Monroe Trotter is not nearly well enough known, and Cary Greenidge obviously knows that. He hasn't been written about a lot, but he was one of those American radicals and an extremely important voice and energy in our past that really needs to be known about. So this is both history and biography. And it also, it does bring in a number of personalities that you might know better. So in some ways, he was kind of acting as the glue between all these other kind of people that were standing up for African-American rights. So I would, if you really want to, you can start with American Radicals, and then you can look at the William Monroe Trotter if you really want a more of a deep dive into one of these personalities. And I think both of these books are kind of great to just kind of keep the fight going and look at the mistakes that people made, but also look at what they were able to do as we continue forward.
Poetry. I'm not normally somebody that reads a lot of poetry, but there are so many on this list that really looked just so interesting.
Yeah, it's a really incredible list. And actually the poetry jury went for the longest of trying to decide and really talking through the titles. And they had multiple long meetings to do it. But the winners, are wonderful. So, the two honorees were Nightshade by, Andrea Cohen and The Boy in the Labyrinth by Oliver de la Paz. So Nightshade, Andrea Cohen is a very well-known poet in the Boston area. She runs a reading series. She does a lot of work on the part of poets. And Nightshade is this pristine, whittled down collection, and though it also can be funny at times, but if you just want just clean little moments of poetry that achieve a great deal on the page, then this would be great to come to. And you can also, the judges were talking a lot, like Nightshade is one of those collections that you can kind of dip in and out. I mean, it does definitely have a center to it, but it's also one of those collections that you can just read a poem and then go away, and then you can read another poem here, you know, and kind of enjoy them really individually. Whereas The Boy in the Labyrinth probably is, it's a much, I won't say more ambitious book. It's a much longer poetry book, and he includes a lot of more narrative poems, and he's talking about some difficulties with his son who has a mental illness. And dealing with his son, that's The Boy in the Labyrinth. And it's got a great deal of heart. It's got a great deal of emotion, and it really moves. This is a book of poetry that you might want to put a little bit more work into. It's really a book of poetry, that poets themselves would love. But I also think anyone that's dealing with, you know, the difficulties of raising, a child that has special needs, and being the father to that child, and what do you do, and how do you behave, and how do you think about it, and how do you act, that this collection would be a real go-to for a lot of readers.
That sounds wonderful. Those both sound great. And I feel like with poetry, I don't know about others, but for me, like, I feel like when Poetry Month comes up every year, I find it easy to find kids poetry from being a school librarian, kids poetry books that I really enjoy, but sometimes I don't know where to start with finding adult poetry that I'll be interested in. So I feel like I'm going to be working off of this list.
I mean, the state has a number of really high level colleges and universities, and so, you know, sadly, if you're a poet, actually, even if you're a fiction writer, and I'm talking from personal experience, it's kind of difficult to make a living. So a lot of our writers do work in the academia, and it helps them. They can teach what they love, and then it also gives them more time to work on their work. So that kind of gifts us, because we have so many great colleges and universities, some of the best in the world in the state. We also have this great draw of poets in this state as well. Though, of course, there's plenty of amazing poets that aren't in the academic world at all. The winner for poetry was Karen Schofield's Battle Dress. So Karen, Yeah.
Oh, that was the one I circled that I was like, that looks so good. I have to read it.
She did go to the same MFA program at UMass Amherst that I went to, both accessible and difficult. But this is the sort of book that our judges were like, I would hand this to my friend and I would hand this to my buddy and I'd hand this to any number of people that don't regularly read poetry, because I think it does have the draw of the subject matter. And I know one of my novel incubator students is actually working on a novel about a female Iraq war veteran. And so I said, I think you need to contact, well, first off, read Karen Schofield's Battle Dress. And then I think you can need to talk to Karen. And of course, Karen is so generous that she was willing to talk to my student. But this is an important book, and a really good book to kind of put things in perspective for us.
Yeah, that looks, I feel like, as you're saying, it has such appeal to people who don't normally read poetry. I was so drawn to the subject matter, and I feel like that's going to be a really great read. I've got to do some library holds and some book orders. How about, well, I'll save picture books. I can talk about those in a minute. How about middle grade and YA? Oh, I was marking up a storm on my list because there's so many.
This is a real powerful list.
So we've got,
for honorees, we've got Rajani LaRocca's Midsummer's Mayhem. And so that's off of Shakespeare's Midsummer's Night Dream. So she's kind of using that. But this book also involves some fantasy elements. And it also involves a great deal of cooking, in particular Indian cooking. And so I think anyone that wants a kind of lighter, more frolicking read that has a lot to do with fabulous food, I would recommend this. And then White Rose by Kip Wilson. This is a really huge, important book. So this book takes place in the Second World War. It's told in verse. It's really about, you know, what individuals can do to create change. It's told in verse. It's longer, but, and that might scare off some people, like, oh, a novel told in verse, but it's actually highly, highly readable. She's done an amazing job, and I would really recommend this for adults and young people very, very easily.
Yeah, that one looks just so fascinating, and I love books in verse, and I feel like
and the winner was Linda Mullally's Hunt's
really great. Ooh, how about the winner?
And so this book takes place on the Cape. It has a more kind of blue collar family background to it, so it's dealing with a lot of issues in terms of identity and class and place, and it also deals with friendship. This is a beautiful book. I think any kid's gonna grab this book and just like love it. You know, our judges really they were just so fond of this. They just really fell for the main character. And so emotionally, they really attached to it, but also thought this book is hitting everything in terms of not only being an important Massachusetts book about the Cape, and particularly seeing a part of the Cape that we might not otherwise see, but also dealing with these bigger issues that are so important for us to think about today. So this is a great book.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. I loved Fish in a Tree and used it for some different book clubs and things, and the kids just adored it. I have not read this one yet. I don't know how I haven't, but I big stars. Yeah. I have to read this one. I didn't realize she was from Massachusetts, so that's good to know too. And then I love I'll give a shout out for Cillily Jenkins, The Epic Story. I love that series so much. And Susan Tan's been on the podcast. That's a great one that's on the must-read list. The next great, Polly Fink, too. She's been on, and I love that one. And I can't think of the name now of her first book, but I love that one, too. It's just such a rich list. I can imagine they had a very hard time narrowing down winners, as we did for picture books and early readers. I just feel like we fell in love with so many of the titles. And as, you know, as I was preparing for this conversation, you know, my wheels were just turning with, I felt like as I was reading, there's so many different ways you could be using the book. So I'm kind of just looking at the must read list, you know, I think, you know, again, depending on how the school year goes, I think that, picture books can be a really great jumping off point for parents, for teachers, as you know, we try to create rich learning experiences for kids. And I'm just thinking of, you know, Eek-Eureek can be going into, you know, learning about poetry and encouraging kids to write their own poems. And, you know, you've got Monument Maker, which I know they used to do a unit on monuments, I think in fourth or fifth grade, at least in the district I was in. And just, they had so many fascinating local history characters in Monument Maker. And then, you know, you've got a great folk tale with Tiny Feet Between the Mountains. And, you know, you could be thinking about astronomy with What Mitchell Saw. So I really feel like you could take this list. And, you know, I think it can be overwhelming for everyone's going to be having to be thinking about new ways to teach and have learning experiences for kids. So at least in Massachusetts, I feel like this could be a real jumping off point. Like maybe you decide to read all of the must read picture books together and use those to kind of dive into different learning experiences. I think that could be really powerful. I mean, Gittle's Journey could go into, you know, research on immigration, follow Chester in terms of talking about racial justice. So I feel like teachers and librarians have to get their hands on these titles and parents too. But the ones that we decided on, which we loved, so our overall winner was Vamos, Let's Go to the Market by Raoul III, which is such a wonderful book. It is told in English and Spanish and through comics, which I think, you know, we have so many comic fans and graphic novel fans that I think are going to eat this up, and just gorgeous illustrations and so intricate. I feel like you could spend hours poring over this one. And I think that there are going to be so many kids that just fall in love with this book. And we were saying as we were talking about it, just it's one that you are going to want to read over and over.
You know, they're kind of vibing off of comic book illustrations and advertisements. And it's a really unique book. And the way it weaves in the Spanish and English seems to me the best possible way to introduce both languages to a young reader.
Yes, and the way they bring this marketplace to life, I mean, it's true, even as an adult, just poring over, you know, all the different jobs that people have and, you know, the different things that they're selling. It's just so vibrant and bustling and just a joy to read. I really enjoyed that one. And then for honorees, one of them is Daniel's Good Day by Misha Archer, which I have read this to my kids over and over. Which I think is one of its appeals. I feel like you could be reading this aloud in classrooms and libraries over and over again. So it's about a boy walking from his house to his grandmother's, and along the way in his neighborhood, he's sort of asking people what a good day to them would mean. And I love the sort of small moments that they narrow in on. Yeah. So for one person, which I was relating to as I was reading, a nanny with very rambunctious children saying the baby's napping, and, you know, wind for the kite. And I feel like you could have so many conversations about what makes a good day for you and things to be grateful for. And the illustrations are just so beautiful. I feel like you could just pore over the illustrations all day. I think they're collage
about the mental wellness of kids, and I don't know, you know, keeping kids inside and away from their friends and kind of closed in. There's got to be some sadness there, I would think, that parents are also dealing with. So looking at like just the mindfulness of what is still special and what is a good day. And this, I think, is just a bright spot book that you can give to a kid to really kind of help them through some of those issues.
You know, it's interesting too, along with that, I feel like one of the only things we can do right now is take lots of walks, and people are friendlier than ever, I think, because, you know, everyone is longing for that interaction. So I think, you know, it does that, a whole idea of walking through your neighborhood, saying hello to people, interacting with people in your community, I think is definitely timely as well. And then the other honoree, which is by Mo Willems and illustrated by Amber Wren, is also so lovely. We were talking in our discussion, just how it gave me all the feels. So many people know Mo Willems from, you know, Elephant and Piggy and The Pigeon. This is a very different picture book, and it's really talking about sort of the the all the different things that had to happen to, you know, eventually have this girl become a conductor and to be composing a symphony. And, you know, along the way, it's so many little things. It's, you know, an uncle gets sick and that helps inspire her love of music because it means she gets to take his place to see this symphony. And, you know, the librarian for the orchestra had to print the, you know, the score, and the subway driver had to get the people there. And I just think it's such a wonderful way to see that everybody plays a part, and just that you never know what moment, you know, someone's going to have sort of a spark of inspiration or something that helps them uncover a passion.
Right.
But then at the same time, it talks about, you know, how hard she works to pursue this once it becomes her passion. So it's like that combination of chance and hard work that I think is really interesting. And the illustrations in this one are just also so wonderful. That, which was interesting about judging the picture books. It's like finding that sort of that, I think the ones that wound up on the must read list and also the overall winners and honorees, you know, had such strong illustrations and stories, which I think is a little probably different for picture books that you're really thinking about both. But yeah, I loved this one. And I think that, you know, I was thinking for this, like, oh, what a, at my school that I used to work at, they used to teach in the music class, for elementary school kids, like how to compose your own songs and everything. I was thought of what a fun jumping off point that would be for, you know, maybe a music teacher to be reading it over.
It's just a beautiful
Zoom, depending
book.
On how
and I remember
things go.
Iris Stigato on our,
so,
on
yeah,
our
this one's really great.
She was just like, you know, there's one page you open up and they're actually starting the symphony and it just goes boom. And I don't think there's any words on that page otherwise. And it just, she says, it gave me the shivers and I was absolutely there. Like you get really involved with this book.
Yes, it's just, it's fantastic. And, you know, I think just the whole list in general, I'll link to what I have been going off of. I printed out the PDF of all the winners and I honestly had so much fun marking up the ones I want to read and, you know, ones I've already read and kind of circling things. So it is fun to print it out and mark it up and decide which ones you want to buy or get from the library. And then I'll also definitely make sure to link to all the books online as well. I love to ask what authors are reading. And I know you did tons of reading this year for the Massachusetts Book Awards. Is there anything you're reading right now or that you've read lately that
really
you want to recommend,
you know,
that you maybe
Sickles
just read for fun?
Came out with this novel called The Prettiest Star. That's just a heartbreaking, wonderful read. I highly recommend that. Another local writer, Rishi Reddy, came out with a novel called Passage West, which takes place during the 1930s. It's almost like a Grapes of Wrath, but from an Indian American point of view. That's really a wonderful book. You've got The Book of V by Anna Solomon that has three different characters, three different women from three different timelines. It's just smart and so well done. And then I know a lot of these authors and I love a number of these authors. Another beautiful book that takes place in Bolivia is called Only the River by Anne Rafe. I highly recommend that. It plays with time and it plays with war, not plays with war, but it involves war and time and the damage that war can leave on people's lives. It's a beautiful book. It reads like a river. And then an author that I don't know, Marie-Hélène Bertino, wrote this book called Parakeet that I just thought was an absolute delight. It's funny and bizarre. At the beginning of it, this young woman is getting married and her mother shows up in the form of a parakeet and asks her what the internet is. And I'm like, I'm in. I'm there. Granny is a bird asking about the internet. I'm like, yep, that's me. I'm there. No, I've actually had lots of reading time. I could go on. That's kind of dangerous, actually.
No, well, I want to give a shout out as well to, I was noticing as I was preparing for this interview, so I mentioned bio that you are an instructor for the novel incubator program at Grub Street. Yeah. And I have to tell you, so many of my favorite books, I end up realizing that they have come out of the novel incubator program. And one that I read, while we've been home, yeah. A Bend in the Stars by Rachel, Barenbaum? Oh, I just adored that book. And it stuck with me. I heard her speak at the Boston Book Festival, and she said in her talk, that the characters at the heart of it is, you know, when do you decide to leave? This is Russia during 1914. And I kept thinking about that in those months since, of like, just that question of, you know, it's easy to look back in history and think, you know, why didn't they, you know, get out when they could? But it's like, when do you go? I found that novel completely fascinating. A Bend in the Stars, I will link to it. Just such well-done historical fiction. And then the other one that's come out of Novel Incubator, I am such a Louise Miller fan, and I have read and reread her books. And I just reread again The Late Bloomers Club, because I just needed a heartwarming, feel-good, wanted to revisit the characters of Guthrie. I love A City Baker's Guide to Country Living and The Late Bloomers Club. If you're looking for just heartwarming, uplifting, characters that you'll love. I so appreciate you coming on to talk about the book awards, and I'm so thankful to have been a part of this whole process. It was just such a gratifying experience as a librarian. It was so rewarding and enriching. So thank you for that, and thank you for all your work on it. All right, well, thank you so much for coming on, and stay safe, and hopefully we will get to celebrate the book awards sometime soon.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com, and there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores, so it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome, and you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.